El siguiente es un programa pagado por el anunciante y 1600 AM no se hace responsable por las opiniones reflejadas en su contenido.
This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlo Dermagerdichian. Welcome you to another episode of our program. Today, my guest is Mr. Robert Avadisyan. He is the permanent representative of the Nagorno-Karabakh Artsakh Republic to the United States, and he's been holding that position since 2009. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you very much for having me, Professor.
Thank you so much for joining us again, because we had spoken a couple of months ago, right after the November agreement that had ended the war that had started on September 27th. And now it's been, I think today it's close to 3 months, just a couple of days away from 3 months after the conclusion of the shooting part of the war. I wonder if you'd give us an update, just in a very general sense, about what's happening today in Artsakh? What's happening in terms of the population and the government?
Thank you for this opportunity, and I also want to welcome your listeners. First, thank you for your continued interest in the situation in Artsakh, because it's very important for us to share the most up-to-date information, whatever we have, whatever we can share, with our compatriots and all those who are interested in the development in the region. Yes, you're absolutely right. The signing of the November 10 statement, we still are in the anticipation of the next diplomatic, political and diplomatic step, which would be a more comprehensive settlement or agreement, and which would be, in our opinion, it should be much more stable, much more firm in providing the basis for a long-term peace. If it comes to what we have been doing since then, our government and everybody who is supporting the Artsakh government, right away embarked on the process of easing the humanitarian pain of the people who were affected by Azerbaijani-Turkish aggression. And the range of questions was very wide, and it is still very wide. It starts with the basic needs, day-to-day needs, ending up with dwelling, with housing, with different infrastructural requirements. And state of Artsakh, the government of Artsakh, has developed jointly with the government of Armenia, especially our social welfare ministries and services. They have developed a special program which is called to help all the parts of the population who were affected by this aggression, and it includes financial assistance, it includes different types of incentives. In parallel with that, the state also helps with most financially demanding aspects of daily life, which is utility bills or payments for the loans or interest and everything. So everything is on hold, everything is covered by the state. The state is trying to create that comfortable situation so people can return without any further shock and have some time to catch a breath, to find themselves in the new reality, and to figure out how they want to do their lives in the future.
And I know it's probably too soon to ask, but do you or the government of Artsakh have an estimate of the financial impact of the war? Just some general idea of how much it actually cost in the loss of the, you know, the loss of housing and all of those things?
It is hard to say, even approximately, but we can speak about at least hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not only the housing, but also the entire infrastructure. But the process is on, and we really hope that when we say that there should be a political and more comprehensive, more legally binding or more legally firm agreement, much heavier than the statement we have seen since on November 10th, we hope that the configuration will be something different, and we cannot really do the proper estimate. But as of now, we're speaking about hundreds of millions of dollars. And I know that about $300 million is only the humanitarian package that we need to cope with the most pressing humanitarian needs of the people affected by the conflict.
And that number, even if it's an estimate, is significant because it probably constitutes a great percentage of simply the economic output of the republic. Is that right?
It is, and especially considering the losses in territory and in infrastructure that we have suffered. Because prior to that, we were doing pretty well economically, and we still have in mind, our vision is to get back on our feet as soon as we can and to accommodate to the new realities. And of course, try to change those realities in a way much more favorable for us. But yes, we have lost a significant part of our economic potential, which makes the story much more difficult.
And when we talk about the housing, and there's just one area that I want to talk about, because it seems to me, again, that because of the damage, especially in Stepanakert, but of course throughout Artsakh, that any of the citizens coming back to the republic have to be found, housing has to be found for them. And how is that being financed? Is outside governments helping or institutions helping the republic?
We are open for cooperation and help from anyone who is ready to help. We're happy to say that many people have approached this question with a great understanding. And if there is any housing which is available, they just provide it for free of charge for the for people who have lost their homes. Some people rent their houses if they need that money and the help, and with the help of the state, because the state kind of reimburses the housing expenses. In parallel with that, we have, as part of the peacekeeping mission, we also have Russian Federation assistance to the people who are affected by war, and there is a construction going on with the help of the peacekeeping forces and the relevant logistical infrastructure to build houses. In parallel with that, the Artsakh government is also accumulating whatever financial resources we have. And of course, those are complemented by the participation of the assistance from the Republic of Armenia. And we also hope to see an increased participation of diaspora in elimination of all those problems.
And we saw that during, of course, the conflict itself, that many citizens were forced to leave their homes. And now that some of the territory has been ceded to Azerbaijan, do you see or have a sense of those citizens who have lost their homes completely moving back to the part of Artsakh which remains? Are they coming back to Artsakh themselves?
We are seeing it. And we have seen an increasing population, hopefully temporary increase in population in Artsakh, well, in Stepanakert, meaning that all those people who are planning to live and strengthen their region, because the agriculture will probably remain a major economic aspect of their life of Artsakh, they're temporary in Stepanakert until they find the opportunity to resettle to a more permanent place of residence, which is in the regions mostly. We have many people who are from Hadrut, and many of them have been traditionally engaged in agriculture. And we're trying to solve the problem, the infrastructural problem, the housing problem, so people can go and resettle in their new place of living and begin on on planning their future economic activity and daily life. But as of now, many of them live in Stepanakert because infrastructurally Stepanakert is the best prepared for that, because Stepanakert has the best opportunities to accommodate additional influx of population, also temporary, but still Stepanakert, and it is a center of the republic, and it is called to help in the situation when it is needed most. And now the need is to provide a temporary place, or even somebody if they want to stay in Stepanakert, of course they're free to do so. But we hope and we expect that with progress in our program on strengthening the regions again and providing the residences and housing, many people will prefer to go to periphery and strengthen the regions.
And in the United States, of course, the number one problem for the last year has been the pandemic, the COVID pandemic. And I understand that during the war, and of course, there was an outbreak also in Artsakh, just as everywhere. What is that status today? And are vaccines coming? Is that something that's happening in the Republic?
That is also one of the spheres in which we're very tightly interconnected with the Republic of Armenia. So the vaccination and all the processes will be through the general Armenian healthcare, so to say, which will include Republic of Armenia and Republic of Artsakh. We also might have some help from the peacekeepers. We don't know yet, but that issue is in the focus of the attention of our healthcare officials. We have a new Minister of Healthcare, which has already declared that he has several plans, and this COVID fight, of course, naturally, it is one of the biggest challenges so far. After the war, which had its own very tragic course and consequence, now kind of we get back into looking into the COVID situation. And lately, a couple of days ago, as far as I remember, there were 8 more cases of new registered COVID cases. So with the pace of life in Artsakh getting back to relatively more peaceful than it was during the war, all those problems which are so obvious in the United States and elsewhere, all the countries which have been affected by it, they become more evident, and they hit the agenda again, and we're dealing with them.
And the war, of course, affects every sphere of everything in Artsakh. But I wanted to just talk a little bit about the politics and the government. Are there plans for elections soon? As I was reading that they were talking about that. Is that something that's going to happen, or is it going to be status quo for the near future?
There is no any plan for extraordinary political processes. There was a process which has been launched by the President of the Republic of Artsakh to form a new government which would include all political forces, representatives of all political forces in the Republic, even those who didn't make it to the parliament during the recent elections. Now we have several new ministers which were appointed a few weeks ago. We're very glad that process is bringing to a more efficient kind of new approaches, which are very often important in the post-war situation in any society. We also have a new foreign minister, Mr. David Babayan. Many of your listeners probably know him. He's been very active in his life, in his political career. He was for a very long time head of the main information office under the president's administration of Artsakh. Before that, he was member of the foreign ministry. So we have new foreign ministry, we have new ministers in key positions, and there is an attempt to solidify and to fill our government with new projects and to figure out what we can do to eradicate the consequences of all this, to get back on our feet as soon as possible, including economically and militarily and politically, and to be on alert, and God knows what will be the challenges ahead of us. We have to be ready for that.
I wanted now talk a little bit about the statement that was signed on November 10th. It called for Russian peacekeepers to monitor the lines of contact, the places where The armies were close to each other. But for Artsakh, in real terms, it meant that your only connection to Armenia is through the Pertsor or Lachin corridor. How is that operating? Is that allowing Artsakh to move freely back and forth, Armenians to move freely back and forth?
Yes. So far, we didn't have any major incidents. There are still many questions which expect their final solution in terms of who is responsible exactly or precisely for what, and where. We have to understand that in the reality, when Azerbaijani political and military leadership, they remain as aggressive as they were before this war, they need to be reminded permanently and periodically about the boundary, which is a limit for them. And that refers also for any kind of political claims or attempts to further solidify their control, even indirect control, of the processes around the Republic of Artsakh. So we are on alert. We know that Azerbaijanis and Turks who support them not only militarily but also significantly politically, they will try to do whatever they can to make Artsakhis give up in their hearts and minds, to just be tired of all the complications that Azerbaijanis are still willing to impose on Artsakhis. But of course, with our experience and with our knowledge of the adversary, of the enemy, and with our resolution to remain and to keep Artsakh Armenian, that will not work. So whatever difficulties are there, they're being settled down one by one. Azerbaijanis and Turks are periodically reminded about the limit of their responsibility or the responsibilities they have assumed. Peacekeepers are pretty effective in providing their mission, and Armenians and the Artsakh in this process of restoration as an army or as a component of the security system in the region is also looking into the situation. We follow the situation. We know what are the rights and liberties that we get with that November 9th statement. That corridor is functioning. There is no any limit for daily commute, and people are just traveling back and forth normally.
And you talked about Azerbaijan and its periodic, I guess, belligerence or aggressive statements. And you said periodically they need to be reminded, or Turkey and Azerbaijan need to be reminded. But do they listen to Russia? Is that who is making the biggest decisions now, or is it OSCE, France?
Ideally, well, there is a process of there is an OSCE process, and nobody canceled that process. So the expectation is that, and this has been also voiced by central authorities in Moscow, the expectation is that the OSCE will resume its active role in this. And there is actually invitation for the international community for a wider involvement in the Karabakh issue, in the Azerbaijan-Karabakh conflict from one side, and also in the issue of humanitarian restoration and the post-war restoration of Artsakh from the other side. Yes, the expectation is that the Minsk group will continue, but those signals, as of now, they are communicated through the relevant forces which are on the ground. But it is also, to our extent, what we can do on our own. We know that the intentions are pretty clear towards us, and we use all the available opportunities and channels to deliver the messages and to make sure that the relative peace is preserved, and all the issues which can be solved right away and cannot be raised in the future are solved very easily and peacefully.
My guest today is Mr. Robert Avedisyan. He's the permanent representative of the Nagorno-Karabakh Republic, Artsakh, to the United States. We're going to take a brief pause for some messages and some music, and we'll be back to All Things Armenian in just a moment.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlow Dermergerdichian. During the break, we were listening to the song Imchi Nari Yada, sung by the Armenian Chamber Choir under the direction of Robert Melkeyan. So this was some Armenian music that we were listening to. Today, my guest on All Things Armenian is Mr. Robert Avadisyan, the special representative of the Nagorno-Karabakh Republic to the United States. Thank you so much for joining us today and for updating us on some things that are difficult to even update on. But I appreciate your joining us today, Robert.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'd like to talk a little bit about now more of the humanitarian efforts, in particular in terms of prisoners of war. Do you know or are aware that that there are still Armenian soldiers who are being held by Azerbaijan? Is that something that's continued, or have all of them been able to return?
Unfortunately, Azerbaijan continues to follow the pattern of its behavior, which we have been seeing from that country for decades now. Even after the first war in the early 90s. No, the issue of prisoners of war is not solved. We have many prisoners of war still captured by Azerbaijan, and unfortunately the country continues to politicize that and further complicate, unnecessarily complicate, this truly humanitarian issue for obtaining some political or whatever gains that they have in mind. We know that the UN experts on human rights, they also demanding kind of, they appealed publicly in writing for the release of the POWs and for stopping the tortures which have been reported from the places of detention in Azerbaijan. That process is the pressing, is very urgent, and it's a daily concern, very urgent concern for the entire Armenian society in Artsakh, in Armenia, and I'm sure many in diaspora, they also feel the same pain. Negotiations are still on. We hope that the country which is declaring its intention for a more peaceful South Caucasus or peaceful coexistence with its neighbors, including Armenians, they will approach this issue without any, again, unnecessary complication, without proper appreciation of a human life and dignity, and we will see all our brothers and sisters returning home soon.
And that issue was one of the top issues, I believe, at the January meeting of the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan in Moscow, was it not?
It was. It is a subject of all the rounds of talks and phone calls and negotiations and meetings, but unfortunately, the lack of a tangible result. There was a result, sort of, because many of them were returned to Armenia, but we still know that much more POWs still remain in Azerbaijan. So unless there is a final solution of this question, we cannot be satisfied with the outcome. But we don't see the appropriate reaction from the other side.
And of course, another issue that's related, it's not human lives and certainly not at the same level, but it's the Armenian monuments and churches, which were turned over in a sense because of the territorial loss. What are some of the efforts being done in that arena of working to protect those Armenian monuments? Because we know what happened in Nakhichevan several years ago with the destruction of the Norjuha Khachkars.
Yes, and what happened to Jula Khachkars again keeps the absolute urgency about the issue of preservation of cultural heritage. Our all channels have been raising this with relevant international structures. But if we see even in the issue of human life and dignity, if we see that kind of approach from Azerbaijan, you can imagine that the issue of the Armenian cultural heritage will be even farther on the list of priorities for them. We have seen the barbaric and vandalism attitude towards Armenian monuments, which are of value not only for Armenians but for the entire world. And we believe that they belong to the global cultural and religious heritage. We have seen that during the war. We have seen it after the war, because not only Azeris, but also the Turks, and especially the terrorists from Middle East, which have a long history of dealing with Christian monuments, dealing in brackets, of course, and destroying and the demolition of the global Christian, not only Christian, but global cultural heritage. We know what will be the fate, and we are raising this issue in every possible platform, in every possible arena, and with every structure that can directly or indirectly influence the Azerbaijani intentions or prevent our cultural monuments from being lost forever, because we know that Azerbaijan has been seeing these kind of steps as a convenient way of erasing signs of presence of anybody or anything Armenian. Artsakh, which is a place for thousands of cultural monuments, historical, religious monuments, it is packed with Armenian spirit. It is packed with Armenian history. It is packed with Armenianness. And we hope that together with major democracies in the world, if they want to weigh in this issue, of course it will be more than welcomed, with international organizations which are dealing with cultural heritage, we will be able to save that heritage, which doesn't belong only to us, but belongs to the entire humankind, will be preserved from vandalism, which we have been seeing for decades.
Now, you are the permanent representative of the Artsakh Republic to the United States, but I'm curious, how does it work in other countries? Are there representatives of Artsakh in Europe, in the major capitals? Do they have special representatives? Are they, and what is their status? How are they seen by the governments there?
We have representations in 11 countries. We have representations in major structures which are dealing with the Karabakh problem, with the Karabakh-Azerbaijani conflict. We have representations in countries which have major Armenian diasporas, because we always rely on help and support of our compatriots in pushing our general agenda, which is not only the issue of the security and sovereignty and prosperity of Artsakh, but it is also the issue of security, sovereignty and prosperity of Armenia, the recognition of the Armenian genocide, and we have that general pan-Armenian agenda, and we all serve the same purpose. We have that, and the permanent representations have been playing for decades now a role in implementation of the foreign policy, and we are part of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Artsakh. And we, in every country, we have sort of different level of legal strength or factual strength or opportunities to work. But the most important thing is that throughout these years, we have accommodated and somewhat found channels to deliver the message of our government to try to protect the interests of our people actions by Azerbaijan's Turks and all their supporters to the extent possible.
And I think that in France or in other countries, there have been at least efforts in their parliaments or by government bodies to recognize officially the Republic of Artsakh. Is that something that is still high on the priority of the Republic? Is that something that you see can be done outside of the OSCE process? In other words, have some country recognize Artsakh and then start other countries doing that?
Yes, Professor. And I know that some things, when it comes to Artsakh, many things seem difficult and very complicated, especially considering the weight of the force which is counteracting to all our actions. But when we are asked about how possible or impossible one thing is, I often recall the words by Nelson Mandela, who said that everything seems impossible until it's done. Everything is possible. And we understand that the issue of recognition of Artsakh starts and ends in Artsakh. We need strong society, strong economy, strong bureaucracy, strong army, strong alliances, and strong vision as a nation to have that self-determination in ourselves. Strong enough, that sense should be strong enough so we can kind of export that self-determination, that vision to the capitals, major capitals. Yes, in France, we have seen significant progress in that, and we are very glad and we are grateful to the French people and the National Assembly for supporting, for expressing support to our democratic aspirations. There is the similar resolution in the U.S. House, which calls for more official ties with Artsakh, with elimination of any barriers between communications between the Republic of Artsakh and the United States, and the recognition of Artsakh, and that Artsakh should be praised for its democratic aspirations. We have similar legislative motions and initiatives in many countries. A few days ago, the state of South Australia in Australia have recognized Artsakh's right to live in freedom and dignity and security, which becoming the second state in Australia. 8 states in the United States, they've also adopted similar resolutions in support of our democratic sovereignty. So, and they also say that once the train has moved, it is hard to stop it. And I think that was also one of the things which showed that the recognition of Artsakh and Artsakh sovereignty is a process which has already launched. And it was inspiring for us. It is inspiring for us, and the process continues. And we are hopeful that with proper development domestically and with a proper political environment in the region and in the relevant cities, capitals around the world, we will see Republic's Artsakh recognition as a fact, because it is not only something we want to use as a sign of self-esteem or for some kind of vague purpose. No, the recognition of Artsakh, its sovereignty, is a key to security and prevention of genocidal threats against the Republic of Artsakh. This is the main reason why we fight for that recognition, why we fight for our independence to be recognized, in order to save the people from further suffering and tragedies similar to what we've seen so many times, and most lately in September, October, and November of 2020.
The Republic of Turkey has been, of course, a major factor in the recent events, in the war and other things. I was just wondering, does Artsakh have any formal or informal relations with Turkey? Do they ever talk about anything that's taking place, or is it simply silence on that part?
There is silence on that part, and we all know the reality in Turkey. We all know the regime in Turkey and how it complied with the vision of Azerbaijani regime. Basically, there's a little club, and there are members of that club. No, there is nothing, and whatever is happening We are coordinating our efforts with the rest of the Armenian reality, Armenian political realm, our organization, and our part of the Armenian people who have been affected by the development or by the political persecutions of not only the victims of the Armenian genocide who lost their homes, but also those who have been subject to the aggression and import of anti-Armenian sentiments from Turkey, including to Azerbaijan and somewhere. But there is no any tie between Turkey and Artsakh. There is no any cooperation. There is nothing. We never limit ourselves to... We have never restricted our round of communication, but we are, at the same time, we know that in the present Azerbaijan or in the present Turkey, there will be very few interlocutors for Artsakh to talk to.
And I'm just speaking personally, but to me it seems amazing. I'll use just the word amazing, but that when Turkey was working with Azerbaijan and during the war, that there was almost none or very little reaction in the international community to somehow influence or to say, you know, this is beyond what normal states should be doing. How do you see that?
Everybody is disappointed, and we in Artsakh were also very much disappointed to see that our strive for democracy, that our ability to protect ourselves for so many years against Azerbaijan, at least, that our intention to be a provider of security in the region, a provider of predictability in the region, have not been supported by all those countries who have assumed the line and claimed to be at the forefront of the fight against international terrorism, because we did fight against terrorism for the second time in our history. We were surprised to see lack of involvement from countries who have adopted and condemned the Armenian genocide by Turkey, because we were under genocidal threat. And the issue of the Armenian genocide is very directly linked to the issue of the security of Artsakh and freedom of Artsakh. And when I say this, I have in mind that we first were attacked by the same Nuri Pasha, who is very famous for his role in the Armenian genocide in Western Armenia. We were surprised to see how world is deaf, most of the world was deaf to our tragedy, to our sufferings, and to the absolute sense of impunity that Turkey and Azerbaijan and their supporters were allowed in dealing with our tiny, tiny population and our tiny part of the Armenian people. We were glad to hear very strong messages from French leadership. We were glad to see somewhat attempts from other capitals, including from Washington, D.C., actually. But that attempt was disregarded by Azerbaijan, and they resumed attacks several minutes after signing the U.S. brokered a statement on cessation of hostilities. Of course, it should have been followed by sanctions and much more stronger steps. But we haven't seen that, which leads us to the understanding that, unfortunately, in the 21st century, we still have very often somewhat the situation similar to the law of the jungle, that if a country is firm militarily, or if a country is firm in their alliances, they can choose the whole available tool set for dealing with problem or a question with neighbors, and they can suppress our self-determination such brutally, with such an immense armada of force and such a huge number of international involvement, including from terrorists, and the world is not paying a proper attention to it. Well, if that is a challenge, then Artsakh will continue to strengthen on its own. Of course, we know what we can do and what we cannot do, but it doesn't mean that we're going to give up.
My guest today is Mr. Robert Avadisyan. He is the permanent representative of the Nagorno-Karabakh Artsakh Republic to the United States. We're going to take another pause on All Things Armenian to listen to some music and some messages, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlo Demirgardichyan. We were listening to Arnem Yertam Imyara by the Armenian Chamber Choir of Armenia under the artistic direction and conducting by Robert Mulkeyan. My guest today is a special guest and very thankful that he was able to join us today, Robert Avadisyan, permanent representative of the Nagorno-Karabakh Republic to the United States. Thank you so much for joining us. Robert, I want to talk in the last section a little bit more about what's happening in the United States. So could you tell us a little bit more about your priorities, the Artsakh's priorities in the United States and how that is going at this time?
Well, thank you, Professor. Well, priorities, despite the changes in the situation on the spot in the South Caucasus and change of configuration regional, our priorities remain the same. We are here to promote the foreign policy agenda, which includes several items. The first is the solution of the problems with Azerbaijan, of the conflict with Azerbaijan. If we speak about the United States in particular or any other country of residence for the permanent representations, we are here to promote U.S. Artsakh ties. We are here to become the conduit, to be the conduit, and to help to the extent possible active cooperation and links between our compatriots here and your compatriots back in Artsakh. We're here to try to promote political, economic, and cultural ties between our two nations and between Artsakh and our diaspora. We're here to promote recognition of the Republic of Artsakh, investments. So pretty much every usual set of goals you would imagine for any diplomatic representation. And I know that we're not, many people can argue that the representation is not recognized or doesn't have the full diplomatic status, but it doesn't matter in many cases as long as we have the opportunity to promote that agenda. So we are sent as a diplomatic mission from Artsakh, and we have that set of goals. And those goals remain the same. The priorities remain the same.
And you work a lot with congressmen, the Congress and the Senate. Can you give us a sense of how that is progressing in terms of support? Has that been growing in the last 4 years or 5 years? Is it steady? Can you give us just an idea of where that is in the political circles?
Yes, and that is one of the aspects when I said that we're blessed to have an army of Armenian supporters and our diaspora and organizations, which are very well organized and very active and very strong across the world and in particular in the United States. We have major organizations which are involved in political processes, whether I mean a national committee, whether I mean an assembly, we have other organizations and individuals who have connections to legislators and the executive branch. We are here to combine that agenda, and we're very grateful that all our compatriots here, everyone who knows Armenia, Armenian agenda, everybody who realizes the importance of Artsakh for the Armenian agenda, we join hands to try to promote the better understanding of the situation in Artsakh, of the realities on the ground, of the realities in the neighborhood. Also, an important task is to educate, to inform about why Artsakh is important for the United States and what can be done to promote our shared vision of a peaceful, stable, democratic, and economically prosperous South Caucasus. The first step is, of course, information, education, telling about Artsakh, discussing it, and we are very much fortunate to have many, the big army of supporters here in the United States who help us in that mission. We are also very happy that all that grassroots activity of our Armenian organizations and many people who just individually are involved in the political process, it resulted in having a very strong Armenian caucus in the U.S. Congress, which is dealing with the Armenia-related issues. And of course, Artsakh being one of the Armenian issues is also on their agenda. So there is a permanent round of activity, information, raising awareness, trying to take whatever we can from the Congress or learn from Congress and enforce, not before, to strengthen our legislative manner in Artsakh. So we learn from U.S. Congress. We try to share our experience. We should try to establish that cooperation with members of the Armenian caucus and everybody who understands that U.S. and Armenian relations are of a great importance. We have been seeing visits to the region, to Armenia and Artsakh, which significantly helped to raise a proper understanding of the situation in and around Artsakh among the legislators. We also realized that with the level of democratic development in the United States, with the level of strength and political weight of the U.S. Congress, those issues remain of priority. So a well-aware Congress is very important. A strong Congress, strong Armenian lobby, strong Armenian groups, grassroots groups, strong Armenian organizations, and strong Armenian congressional caucus are very important for the protection of our entire Pan-Armenian agenda and Artsakh. We hope that it will always remain a part of it.
And there is a new administration with the new president, President Biden, and a new Secretary of State. I've always been curious, do you make direct contacts to the Secretary of State? If so, how does that work? And then is it, of course, something that you would want is to set up a meeting somehow with leadership in Artsakh, with American leadership?
No, well, we don't have any restrictions on our side, but we understand that in the situation when Artsakh is not yet recognized by Washington, D.C., there are limits to our activity here. But still, the most important, Professor, just like what I said, thinking about the functioning pattern of our representation around the world, is that we have the opportunity to deliver our message through various sources. When we want to inform our colleagues at the state or in the legislative branch about something, it is important to have that channel, and we do have it. And that is the most important thing. The rest is already technicalities, which are absolutely, they have no restrictions on our side, and we're ready for a more active cooperation and engagement with anyone who wants to hear us, who wants to learn about Artsakh, who wants to learn about our potential of cooperation.
And I sense your, you know, during our conversation today, I sensed your positive outlook towards the future. that you and the people of Artsakh are looking to a brighter future with strengthening in all ways. And I wonder what you could tell to Armenians and others that are interested here in the United States. How can we participate in that development and growth? What are the ways to do that? Can you give us one or two very concrete ways in which we could do that?
Professor, I think being in Artsakh is one of the major components of survival in Artsakh is remaining optimist, even in a tough situation. It is tough, especially with such a big tragedy, which is a personal human tragedy for thousands and thousands of families. But one of the strengths of the Artsakhis is that it is virtually impossible to make Artsakhis give up. And we proved it during the years of being conquered by this or that empire. We proved it during the decade of Soviet empire, which wanted to do what Azerbaijan pleased to change the demographic situation and stop Artsakh from being Armenian. We proved it in 1991 when we, with our united force, when the entire Armenian nation could protect Artsakh, and when the rest of the world was signaling Artsakh is to give up and accept conditions of Baku, Artsakh didn't do that. They stood up, paid a very big price, and through those enormous sacrifices defended their right of freedom and liberty and dignity. Today, we're still in the process of overcoming these tragic developments and the result that we've seen. This problem, this outcome, this tragedy is moving slowly from our hearts to our minds so we can digest what is really the priority to do now. But I think the sign that close to 100,000 people already returned to Artsakh, the sign that people already started reopening their businesses, that people already began to take their kids back to schools in Stepanakert and many settlements around Artsakh, the sign that we're not giving up, and especially having in mind that we know that Azerbaijanis and Turks and their supporters want us to give up, that is also a sign, if not an optimism, but a very strong sense of patriotism and selfless dedication to that land, which is already sacred by so many brave individuals who spilled their blood and our heroes. And of course, we have that in mind, and it creates the additional sense of responsibility for us when we move forward as a state and as persons. We still believe that the diaspora and our supporters and our competitors around the world, they can and they will, and we expect that our competitors will continue their support to Artsakh. Our foreign minister, Mr. Babayan, he compared the recent development in Artsakh with a soldier who has returned home, who is wounded, who has lost his leg, who has lost one arm, who has lost one eye, but we are alive. We are alive, which gives us a hope that we have another chance to strengthen. We have another chance not to fail the victims, the heroes which protected this land from being swallowed by an extraordinarily aggressive and fascist government and prevention of another genocide. We have another chance to strengthen as part of Armenian homeland. And this is the fight that we hope the whole of the entire Armenian nation will continue to be members or to be participants of. There is Artsakh. Come to Artsakh. have your plans with Artsakh, help us strengthen, and let's together show the enemy, which is still very aggressive and which is probably one of the most sincere enemies one can imagine, because they never concealed their plans against everything and anything Armenian. We have a chance of together restoring Artsakh's safety, of restoring our nation's dignity as a whole, and to show that we will never give up and we will get through whatever challenge this life has to offer to us.
My guest today has been Mr. Robert Avadisyan. Thank you so much, Robert, for sharing that last message. I think it's a very important message for Armenians everywhere in the world, that we are here to support Artsakh and the Artsakhis. Mr. Avadisyan is the permanent representative of the Nagorno-Karabakh Republic to the United States. Thank you so much for joining us today, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Professor.
For All Things Armenian, this is Professor Barlo Dermagerdichian wishing you a good week ahead, and we'll join you next week for another episode of All Things Armenian.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.